Welcome to the Hashtag MoLedge Podcast broadcast from the state capitol in Jefferson City, sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce, Missouri Farm Bureau, and the Sheet Metal Workers Local 36. Now from the state capitol, the Hashtag MoLedge Podcast.
Welcome to the Hashtag MoLedge Podcast. I want to thank Virgil KMOX, staff of the Missouri Times, the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce, and the Missouri Farm Bureau as our sponsors. Very glad to have on this week Representative Ron Hicks. Glad to have you, sir.
Ah, great to be here.
And Representative Lauren Arthur from the Kansas City area. Very glad to have you on.
I'm happy to be here, too.
So let's start off right off the top. The last week saw a total breakdown in St. Louis County voting. Pretty embarrassing to most everyone around. It even became a political issue in the U.S. Senate race. Lauren, you're on the special committee, and you got to hear, I understand, 5 riveting hours of testimony this week. What'd you learn?
Well, it would take 5 hours to tell you everything I learned, so I don't know if we have that amount of time. But it was an interesting hearing, learned a lot about elections, and I'm happy to report that the focus really was on getting to the bottom of the issue and figuring out what went wrong and how we can prevent that in the future. Obviously, any time that someone is disenfranchised, there are going to be demands for consequences, and I think we saw some of that in committee, but it's a complicated issue. It is one of the most complex jurisdictions for elections, and I think at the end of the day, there is still more to examine it before we make a final decision.
Ron Hicks, is it really that complicated? I mean, all you do all day long is get ready for an election.
It should not be that complex to do. I mean, I even look at it from my standpoint of view. I was actually in Tuesday's election. I was running for mayor of St. Peter's. And, you know, in a close race like that, where I had 42.6% of the vote, that would concern me. I was just watching some stuff last night about the ballot, you know, not having ballots. Why do you not have enough ballots? How do you not have enough ballots for people to vote?
So
how did they not have enough one night?
Yeah, without boring listeners too much, it turned into a perfect storm. Basically, the way ballots are ordered, it is through a process in which the local election authority, their database, has to merge with the Secretary of State's database, and that's the voter database. Mm-hmm. There is then, from that, created a matrix that has all of the ballot orders. So 200 for this precinct, 20 for this precinct. They did that. They proofed it. It was ready to go. Then there was a court order, and in two municipalities, their ballots were changed. There was something added to that ballot. So when they went back to produce the matrix again, there was a computer glitch, and basically the lines got off. Because there were also 2 elections going on at the same time, back-to-back, short amount of window, all of the quality controls, probably people got a little lax with those.
This sounds poorly planned.
Huh? Yeah, so, but who do you blame? I mean, if there's a problem, somebody takes, we're in Missouri, the most famous Missourian of all time, so the buck stops here. It bled into the U.S. Senate race because it is a complex thing. You have 6 executive offices. The auditor has a pretty well-defined job. Mm-hmm. The AG has a real. The other 3 offices, what does the Secretary of State really do? Well, they always tell you they're the chief election officer. So I think in most people's mind, the buck stops with the chief election authority. But in St. Louis, they have a local board, and this is bled into the campaign. Ward Blount's done a very good job of showing Jason Kander saying he's the chief election authority and then showing that the elections were messed up.
It seemed to me, just from watching and listening to everything, it just seemed like one thing after another went wrong there. And that's why I said, where did the breakdown start? They need to look into that. Mm-hmm. Start with 1, go to 2, go to 3, go to 4. Just
Lauren, is it the reality? It seems to me like the Secretary of State doesn't have much of a role in St. Louis elections. It's not a job with tremendous burdens. I would say a state legislator impacts the state far more than the Secretary of State does. But when you're running for Senate, you want to talk it up like it's a big job. He probably overstated his job, but he probably had nothing to do with the breakdown, right?
Right. And actually, in Missouri statute, it says that for municipal elections, it's under the local election authority. So it is completely their jurisdiction and responsibility, and both directors accepted that and accepted responsibility for the mistakes that happened. So they would agree. I think it really kind of devolves into political theater. And interestingly, when Senator Blunt was Secretary of State Blunt, there were a couple of election blunders, and his quotes about the issue are the same thing of, this is a local problem, a local issue, and Secretary of State Matt Blunt had a similar situation and made similar comments. So for them to then blame Kander, I think is very political.
When we say he's the chief election authority in this next interview, last thing, how do you solve it? I mean, I'm just a simple hillbilly from West Butler County, but we have a county clerk. She's elected. If the election is screwed up, we elect a different one. Maybe St. Louis needs to elect the person so the buck can stop somewhere, right?
There has to be someone you can point the finger at somewhere down the line. What if this happens again? Are we in the same boat?
I mean, if you've ever been a Republican, the folks listening to this podcast will know, if you're a Republican and you're refreshing the Secretary of State's page on election night, the first congressional district, for whatever reason, is incapable of counting ballots in any type of relative speed to the other congressional districts. If you're a Republican and you're only up a little bit, you will lose on the first congressional. Okay. If you're a Democrat and you're down a little bit, it is odd to me that every other congressional district in the state can count their ballots before 10 o'clock, 10:30. The first never, ever can. Maybe they need to elect somebody to say, this is your fault if you can't get this done.
Organization.
You know. We're glad to bring in to the hashtag BullEdge podcast, Jay Hahn, governmental affairs extraordinaire. I'm going to bring you in to talk about constitutional carry. Can you give us the breakdown on what that is?
You know, it's a really complicated issue. I do think that there's party identification on that issue. Schools have big concerns about guns on campus.
The concept's not complex, right? You can just carry a gun. Everybody can carry a gun, right?
Correct. So then you talk about, what about dormitories? You know, do schools have the right to claim that, listen, this is our property. We have the ability to opine over whether we choose to allow that type of obligation or that type of, constitutional right inside of our premises.
So the private property rights argument's being tossed back at gun owners. Interesting divide there, huh?
It really, really is. I think that there's probably going to be some trepidation on behalf of Missourians when you talk about people that go to school that are usually of a relatively young age. You do have some non-traditional students, but in general, I think the mass population of folks that enroll as a freshman at a college, whether it be a two-year or a four-year university, are going to be in between the age of 18, 19, and we all reflect as older adults, we look back and say, boy, how responsible was I when I was that age? So that's what makes this a complicated issue.
I often wonder how responsible I am at 36. So, Lord Arthur, break it down. My assumption is you're opposed to constitutional carry.
My people might call it permitless carry.
Okay. Break it down, though. What you look at the problem. I think everybody that has a child that goes to school, when you see these things on the news, you clench a little bit, and you think, well, gosh, maybe you don't need AK-47s or whatever they are they shoot off. But at the end of the day, would it not, on some instances, possibly make things safer?
Well, I would disagree with that. I'm not of the opinion that more guns equals more safety, and neither are people who are in charge of the RNC, because we've seen that they're not going to.
Ah, Ron Hicks. Mm-hmm. Were you planning on going to Cleveland and leaving your gun at home?
If I had to go to Cleveland, I definitely want my gun on me, to tell you the truth.
That is an interesting hook, though. So more guns and make everything great, Republicans say, except at the Republican National Convention. Hypocrisy?
Yeah, of course. You bet. I mean, I just heard a story. I was just sitting in a Senate hearing yesterday, and I heard a story about a senator talking about a young lady in college who left her door cracked. She didn't actually leave it cracked. Her roommate did, so her roommate's cat could come back in. Well, guess who came in instead of the cat? Someone that wanted to do harm to the roommate that was there. And so she luckily had a baseball bat, took a baseball bat to this guy, and he took off. But then a few minutes later, she hears screams down the hallway in another dorm. And so she goes down there with her baseball bat and is beating this assailant off of another young lady. Now, she could have saved a lot of hassle on that second room if that person had busted into her room and she had a concealed carry weapon on her, or even just a constitutional carry. Because I do still see it as constitutional carry, not permitless.
Bottom line, on the floor, what was the
Constitution is my permit.
Overwhelmingly in favor. But I will say, when you explain to Missourians, like most Missourians, when you explain what this bill would do, I think most say that, you know, the requirements to get a permit are not onerous, and the idea of just anyone walking around with a gun is not something that the average Missourian would support.
It's not just anyone walking around with a gun, though. I mean, there are still laws in place. There's still training in place that people are going to take. I don't really foresee someone just, you know what, I can carry a gun now, going out and buying a gun. They'll shoot themselves.
One of the lighter moments of the legislative session was this week when Deb Lavender was offering an amendment and was then going to withdraw the amendment. I think she didn't think that the Republicans would think that's fine. So she goes to withdraw it and then ends up talking too long, gets gaveled down, and doesn't get a chance to. You had to snicker, right? I mean, she's a bit of a bomb thrower.
Exactly. I mean, it was perfect, to tell you the truth, in my mind. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I like her, but it's still, you play a game and you got caught in your game.
You know, there's always a risk when that gavel's open.
You bet.
It calls for the reason that representatives need to be paying attention and that things can happen at any given point in time when that gavel's open.
You play games. This isn't a place to play games.
Going forward, I think we definitely will have our timers out when anyone gets PQ'd, and we'll keep a good eye on that.
I think she learned her lesson on that one, too, to tell you the truth.
Speaking of the social issues, abortion was discussed a lot in the House this weekend, the Senate. Two bills moving through the legislative chamber. Laura, the breakdown, just real briefly, those two bills.
In the House?
Mm-hmm.
So it's two bills combined into one. The first part deals with fetal tissue and whether that can be donated for research purposes. And then the second, I believe, involves basically requirements of facilities that provide abortion services.
Ron, I guess those bills are moving. Mm-hmm.
They're moving.
In the Senate, I assume, Jay, only passed, right?
You know, gosh, I don't have a client on that issue, and so I would have to defer to the fine representatives of the Missouri House and those folks.
I don't think this legislature's had a hard time passing gun bills or abortion bills.
No.
And Jay Nixon, first term, did not veto them. He let them become law. I think second term, Jay Nixon went to vetoing them. But those look like they're on the way to passing. Let's talk quickly about the Senate, though. Unprecedented move. It does break down. Lauren, you're somebody that people talk about could be in the Senate someday. If you send a subpoena...
Why would anyone wish that on me?
Well, if you didn't like the five-hour hearing, I don't think you'd like that.
You'd do a fine job.
Yeah. If you think about it, though, there is an issue with the integrity of the body. If you send a subpoena, do you expect it to be honored? And if not, I think maybe you mentioned a perfect storm. The perfect storm of the integrity of a Senate subpoena... coupled with an issue the Republicans have no problem jumping right into, right?
Yeah. The interesting thing is no one really knows how it would work. Like, the scenarios of going to, if she doesn't show, the protocol for actually going to retrieve her is just really odd. And they're spending a lot of time debating it. And in my opinion, there are other serious issues that we should prioritize over what is essentially about a statewide race.
Ron Higgs, why doesn't Planned Parenthood compile the subpoena? I mean, they're subpoenaing the head of Planned Parenthood. They want some records about what's done with
it. Would you, if you were them?
Thing. If I was subpoenaed, I'd probably have to comply, right?
Well, you think they should. And I honestly feel that if you were subpoenaed, I mean, I know, walk of life I'm in. You subpoena me, I'm showing up. I don't want the consequences, but that's just it. What are we showing them? We're not giving them any consequences. Let's hunt them down. Bring them in.
It looked to me like the Senate, I spoke to Senator Schmidt, he's chaired the, I believe it was the first committee of the whole since 115 years or something, and they laid out, resent the subpoena, and I think what will happen is, or what the Senate believes will happen is, if it's not complied with, they'll have basically a trial with all the senators being the jury, and they'll decide if she's in contempt, and they'll decide on a punishment, which could be jail, could be a fine. I think there's a lot of details that no one knows, but I think that's what the Senate intends to do. I don't know why that they couldn't provide the information. It in journalism, when you send a sunshine law request, somebody says it's going to be $15,000, or we're not giving it to you. That's when the smoke signal is going to think something's there. I think maybe Planned Parenthood might be making people think there's something there by not complying.
I think they've complied, and if you look at the timeline, they've complied at every step. The issue is the documents requested could violate HIPAA. So they're patient records, and when you turn over that kind of information, essentially you're saying, who in Missouri has had an abortion?
When you're subpoenaed, show up.
Would these be...
Say that.
Would something be public if turned over in a subpoena to the state Senate? I mean, I think HIPAA people's names and stuff would be redacted, right? I mean, I don't think that you can turn that over.
Well, listen, the court system clearly has precedent on how to handle these type of issues. I think there's a clear divide between what is procedural, right? And so we're testing those waters currently. And I believe, and I'm not a legal expert, so don't hold me to this, but I believe the Senate has the constitutional authority to do the very things that it's trying to do.
I agree.
And then there seems to be this dividing line on the philosophical side of, okay, we're using something we know that we legally can do constitutionally, it's prescribed, we can do it, but we're using it on this issue.
And now how do we enforce it?
So,
I'll be the person to talk about the media. You know, there's Republicans that run as pro-life, pro-gun, tax-cutting conservatives, and then they govern that way, and people act surprised. I mean, I can't imagine. I think this is where this was heading ever since those videos came out. It'll be interesting to see if the Senate comes through. There was a lot of talk about cutting Mizzou's budget, and the House kind of was consistent, but then Senate got cold feet and caved. We'll see who wins that fight. It'll be very interesting to see how that comes out, but see what they actually do. Take a quick break to thank our sponsors on the Hashtag Mullidge podcast, St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce and the Missouri Farm Bureau. Very glad and honored to be working with them on this endeavor. And let's talk about an issue that may come up next week in medical marijuana. It's been talked about. People know where they are. It's sort of a competing narrative. Show Me Cannabis has a very liberal ballot initiative that they're almost ready to have on the ballot this year. The legislature could do medical marijuana and probably circumvent that petition. I understand at least half the Republican caucus supports it, Ron.
You're right, we do. I'm a supporter of it myself. I mean, we've vetted this now. I mean, even last year, I look at last year's supporters and then this year, and there are people supporting this bill and voted yes for it this year in committee that shocked me, surprised me. I mean, we have a doc now bringing forth some legislation, and it's going to be a tricky situation because, like you talked about with the ballot issue, you know, you got people out gathering signatures, and that one would trump this one. So we put this one on the ballot, but they still get theirs on the ballot. Theirs trumps ours. Which one do you want?
Jan, you talk to legislators all the time. Give me the argument against this.
Boy, Scott, I have to admit that I don't talk to them about this. So, and this is not something that would normally come up in my line of work. Mm-hmm. But I would like to offer that I think that as elected officials that are representing the state of Missouri, the bell curve on this is changing rapidly. The opinions of folks out in Missouri have seen a dramatic change in how they view that issue in the last 10 years. And I think that the momentum is on the side of passing something. And the General Assembly will react.
We're giving people in pain a medicine.
Well, Arthur, who cares who smokes pot anymore?
I don't.
Speaking of issues, people are...
We can agree on something.
Yeah.
Real quick, let's talk about paycheck protection. I think that's the big thing that it was passed by the legislature. It had 110 votes or whatever on it in the House. Veto override with some despair. It looks like that number has went down. Now you have Representative White. It's going to be out a couple weeks with neck surgery. I think that people, when you notice one legislator gone, you know the votes are tight or they don't have them. And then there's a couple legislators that haven't been around much when this bill's been talking about going through. Ron, will they have the votes?
I don't think so. Look, I've been here for 4 years. I'm 100% labor record, and that's a shock to most listening, I'm sure, being a Republican. But the bottom line here is they're even coming to me and asking me to switch my vote. They're looking for someone to switch. They need votes, and they're not getting it out of me. I still represent my constituents and will continue to do so.
Dion, word in the rotunda is they don't need a vote. They need a handful of votes to override the governor.
I wouldn't disagree with you on that. It sounds to me, and this is just rumblings, that votes could possibly be short. But you know, I've heard grumblings before that have been woefully wrong. So
I believe we...
I think we'd have seen it already if that was not the
case.
I
think you're right. I think it would have been came out before Representative White had to step away.
Yes.
I think we won't see it for 2 weeks for sure. And I think it may come down to a couple legislators that aren't around the Capitol when maybe they go to that bill. And whether they decide to be there or not, be interesting. I think the speaker's brought this farther than anybody else thought he could. But that's a tough
I'll give him credit for that.
Prediction 100, do they get the votes?
Ron and I are two in a row in agreement, both on the fact that they're not going to get the votes, and we agree on the issue.
I'll say this, though, Jay, as an observer, if you just set election night with Labor and saw the election returns come in like they did, if this were to pass, a very, very small group of public sector employees having paycheck protection, Labor would have took that deal a bit stunned it was offered, right?
I, once again, just wouldn't disagree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if it were to pass, Labor has been very fortunate the last 2 years of what it could have been. Last issue, the one that's taken all the oxygen in the Capitol this week, SGR 39. Wow. This is a bill that some people call it a religious freedom issue. Some people call it discrimination. Basically, it takes people in a loosely defined, or I guess specifically really defined, creative fields and says they don't have to participate in gay weddings if they don't want to. Ron Hicks, you're on the Emerging Issues Committee. What's the scuttlebutt?
What isn't the scuttlebutt on this bill? This bill is widely talked about. Now, I was out of the building all last week, did some family business, and when I came back in, I was hit like I ran into a brick wall with this.
Were you surprised to see, though, that the people that were hit... This was not liberal activists. This was your normal, this was the business community hitting you.
This is Republicans, Democrats, businesses. I mean, this is all walks of life right now. This issue isn't one-sided. There's not one person standing behind it. There's not one group standing behind it. There are people in the woodworks on this one against it and for it from all over the country, all over this state, in all walks of life right now.
Lauren, are there, who, when you break down, what is the best argument for this that you've heard? I know you're opposed, but what's an argument for this that you've heard that made you think?
To be honest, I really haven't found a compelling argument. I think when you invoke the term religious liberties, people have great reverence for that and great respect for it. It's important to the founding of our country, but I think this goes beyond that and you know, ultimately becomes an issue of someone who decides to engage in public commerce can't really decide who they're going to serve and who they're not going to serve.
Jayon, this issue has turned the normal friends upside down, right? You've got the business groups coming out forcefully on this.
It has, and I think as both the representatives have articulated, listen, I think that this particular issue is uniquely philosophical to each representative, and I have heard very compelling arguments on both sides, and I can understand why this is not a party issue. This is a personal issue to a lot of people, and I am happy that I am not in the representative's shoes, because your heartstrings get tore on this particular issue. I think there's some frustration out there of the conjecturing by both sides turning this issue into what it's not. And I think that's a little unfortunate.
I thought Elijah Haar had a great week. He seemed to do a good job chairing the committee. That could have came apart. Senator Rauner did well too, right?
Excellent. I have sat in, you know, like I said, been here 4 years. I've sat in quite a few. I've been on quite a few controversial committees. I mean, general laws my first 2 years in, and now I'm sitting here on emerging issues and utilities and all these others. Now, we had the right to work, of course, filled up. HHR 1, our House Hearing Room 1. But to see the media that was involved in this one the other night when I walked in that door and saw 13 different national media outlets, not to mention all the ones we normally see sitting in that room, right away I just, and it was overwhelming to see it. I mean, just absolutely overwhelming. And I got to agree with him. You know, there's two sides to this. Heartstrings are being pulled. You got someone like me who
I have had Senator Rauner come under attack on some, I think, somewhat unfairly. I mean, I don't think Senator Rauner is a bigot. I think
he is not.
He believes in the one side of this.
He is not a bigot.
To close up, though, one of the real quick in the Emerging Issues Committee, the chairman for it, Vice Chairman Representative Cross, seems in favor. Jack Bond was pretty outspoken in favor. Jim Hansen and Dave Representative Munsell and Lance seems like they'll be for it. It stacks up to where it was 6-5, maybe the three Democrats will be in opposition, Anser clearly spoke out in opposition. It looks like Caleb Brown's a no. So it ends up being 6-5. Representative Hicks, you're on the Emerging Issues Committee. Word in the rotunda is you're the swing vote. Care to tell us how you're going to vote?
That's exactly why my arm's been twisted for this whole week. But I'm voting yes. I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to stand behind it.
The conventional wisdom is, Jay, right, that if he votes yes, it goes to the floor.
You know, short of something happening through the chairman, they always have discretion on certain things in their committee. I think that's a reasonable assumption.
Lorne, Arthur, this goes to the floor. Do you think you can get it amended?
That's certainly the hope if it comes to that.
Quick prediction to wrap up. Ron, does it get amended?
Nope.
Does it get amended?
Yes.
Do they amend it? Or just going to the ballot?
No client on this issue, Scott. I wouldn't know.
Give me a ballot prediction. If it gets to the ballot in its current form, does it pass? I think it passes.
I think there's a chance that it could.
Yeah.
I think it polls highly.
Lorne, do you think it passes? If it goes to the ballot?
Does the state vote for it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, too.
And I think there are also cases where the majority has voted for discriminatory laws in the past, and now we look back at that and, kind of shake our heads. But the society is changing on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
My thought is let's not wait while people are still being denied services and are not accepted and fully included in society, not to mention the economic issues. So my feeling is let's not do this.
Could it be that it wins in the House, wins at the ballot box, and fails the test of history?
Absolutely.
I want to thank everyone for being here. Also want to shout out to Alex Eaton, won the Barclays Cup.
Yeah.
Thank you to him. Everybody that played, Dave Spence for helping the Epilepsy Foundation. A lot of good work was done for some good people. In the softball tournament, I'm here with Jay Hahn. They ended a dynastic run of three championships. Senator Munslinger's team defeated us last night in a crushing defeat, and we're already plotting our revenge next year. But I want to thank Representative Hicks. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for the insight on the Emerging Issues Committee.
More than welcome.
Representative Arthur, so glad to have you up. Thank you very much for visiting our humble abode here at the State Capitol and the Missouri Times offices.
Thank you.
Jay Hahn, thanks so much for being on. And we want to also remember to thank our sponsors, St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce and the Missouri Farm Bureau. And we'll see you live next week from the State Capitol for the Hashtag Mullidge podcast.